Okay, once again, you are tuned into Off Center Sports here at KWMR. And as I said, it's Off Center Sports with Steve and Jaime. And today, it took us a little minute here. We got some gentlemen up there in the Northland. Yeah, British Columbia. That's north of here, everyone.
University of Victoria.
That's right. For those
awesome place.
Yeah, for those that are geographically, you know,
gifted
or stunted and don't know where they're going. Yeah. That's anyway, and we're going to be talking about
The sport of human submarine racing.
Right. Well, a lot of engineering involved in
this. Yes, yes.
Really
and our
cool.
two guests. First one is Gerald Middleton.
And Mike Gingras.
Gingras, right.
Yeah, I think that we'll ask him. You know.
Jared is the ex-president of the University of Victoria Submarine Club.
That's right.
But he is now the pilot of the sub.
Right.
And Mike is the right now is currently the president.
Yes. And these guys got a lot of phone numbers.
Oh, yeah.
So we figured out.
They are hard to get a hold of.
They are hard to get a hold of, man.
Like most engineering students,
that's
I'm sure.
Right. Well, you know, when you got a lot of ladies, you know, you got to get a bunch of phones.
And I'm sure they do. This is a cool sport.
Yeah, when you're a player, you know, that's what happens.
Dude, we should be playing James Bond music in the background.
That wouldn't be bad. You know, I
for this, this is really cool stuff.
Yeah, I agree. Shall we
bring them on?
All right. Gentlemen, welcome.
Hello?
Hello? Oh.
Hello?
Hello?
Ah, there you are.
You guys there?
All right.
There we go.
How you doing today?
Doing all right. How are you?
Good, good. Now,
wait, I got to ask one question. Mike, how do we pronounce your last name?
So it is French. So forgive you for messing up a little bit.
Okay.
It's just, so in French, it's Gingras. But I've heard pretty much every iteration or different way that you might try and pronounce it.
Okay, so we'll call it's California, so we'll call you Gonzalez. Okay. There you go. All right, man. Órale, pues. Okay, here we go. Well, first off, can you give our listeners a little bit of an insight for those that don't know what we're talking about and what is going on with your sport of human submarine racing?
For sure. So, UVic Submarine Racing Club. So, what we are, we're primarily an engineering club. So what we do each year is we go and design and fully manufacture our submarine, and then we compete with it and race each year. It alternates where the competitions are. So one of the competitions that we do is in the UK. That competition is a little bit different from the second competition, which is in the US. In that competition, basically what we're trying to do is go as fast as we can in a straight line. We've got two left-hand turns and then a slalom. So you want to kind of design your submarine for kind of maneuverability is a really important thing for that competition.
Right.
And then the other one that we go for is, obviously, I just mentioned the U.S. competition, and that one's kind of just a straight line, go as fast as you can. So we kind of change our design methodology each year for that. But the sport itself kind of comes in once we go to these competitions, and we have our pilots who go, you know, diving in the submarine because the submarine is fully flooded. So not your conventional submarine of the
gotcha.
That you'd expect.
Right.
But then they go and race it underwater. And, so it's an interesting combination of, physical, what you put, the power you put out, just in terms of, like, if you want to see, like, the cycling kind of side of things.
Right.
As well as, like, the fact that you're underwater, so it's really hard to kind of catch your breath.
Yeah.
Conventional wisdom of diving is that you should never exercise underwater. So,
right.
That's kind of the sport side of things.
And that's where you guys are just flying against the face of
defying
that
defying the odds.
Yeah. Now, and so let me get this straight then just for another analogy then. So, okay, so one set then is there's two left-hand turns and a slalom. So kind of like I guess you'll say like that's a Le Mans kind of race, and the other one's probably just flat-out drag racing. You're just going straight as fast as you can.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, yeah.
Okay. Now, do you have a website or anything that our listeners can go to, and if you could repeat it a couple times slowly so they can – probably jot it down and
yeah,
check
absolutely.
It out.
Absolutely. If you want to kind of read more about us or hear about what we're up to, our website is just UVIC Submarines, so UVIC submarine.com.
There you go. That's pretty easy right there. And you can also go on YouTube, look up anything. That's how I did a lot of my research.
As well as I did.
Yeah, and I used to, I don't need more, but I mean, I used to work and build surfboards a lot. So I'm kind of really into hydrodynamics and so forth. And, I was really fascinated by the build that was on the molds and whatnot. But now you say, okay, so it fills inside. So obviously you're wearing your pilot's wearing a scuba tank, yeah?
They have a scuba tank that sits in the submarine itself.
Uh-huh.
And then what they'll do is they start on the surface with obviously no tank of air. Okay. And then they'll kind of swim down to the bottom and then take the breather.
Right. the respirator and then just start rolling.
Yeah, the respirator, yeah.
Wow.
So my assumption is that then all of you guys at Pilot are licensed divers.
Yeah. Maybe Jared wants to talk a bit about this.
My first year with the club, I was the master diver, so I was kind of in charge of helping out with the diving stuff, and then I became the pilot. But really, we have to have a fully qualified dive team. So in the water, everyone has to know exactly what they're doing. And not only that, we have to develop our own underwater communication system as well, because we have to convey kind of technical information and a lot of stuff with safety. We do additional safety procedures for getting the pilot out of the submarine as well.
Yeah.
Wow.
And then the pilot himself has to be really calm underwater. It's a pretty critical thing. But really, you are just scuba diving. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like I explain it as like an underwater bike. So you get inside, it's a little bit claustrophobic, and then from there, you're really just pretty much using your engineering knowledge to try and push the submarine to its fullest capabilities.
Now, how many different designs now have you got? Do you guys generally go through? Because I was just watching bits and pieces of molds being made and stuff. But do you have multiple subs, and do you change, you know, steering mechanisms and maybe gear ratios and all that? How does that all work?
It's a lot of sort of trial and error as we're experimenting with things, but certain parts change more than others, and largely that comes down to how easy it is for us to redesign parts and to do the analysis on them. So a few things have changed a lot, like our steering system had a huge change last year. We integrated electronic control. We have an autonomous depth control system built in.
Mm-hmm.
So that changed a lot from first year when we were essentially using a bike cable system. We have that system still as backup because reliability is really important to us, but
right. We
built in a parallel electronic control system. Mm-hmm. Other things like our hull, they take a little bit more research for us to rebuild. There's a lot of analysis that goes into it and a lot of optimization that comes in that's really challenging to do without enough data. We need to know kind of what's the ideal size. You know, once we start changing the hull shape, we're changing the amount of room that the pilot has in there, the center of mass, the drag, the center of pressure, and obviously just a lot of our kind of control aspects as well. So when we're putting the money into having a new mold custom CNC'd for us and doing all the work to make that, we really want to make sure that we are very confident that our new hull will be an improvement.
Now, and all this is on campus. You have all the access to the, you know, to machine all this
materials
and everything?
Materials and such.
Yeah, we do a lot of our work on campus, but
nice.
A lot of it we do rely on local sponsors. Industry sponsors help us out with some things.
Mm-hmm.
They help us with a lot of the machining and just like things we really can't do on campus. And as far as like doing mostly machining on campus, we have actually had to have a few of our students get co-ops in engineering machine shops. I've had a few co-ops in machine shops in order to be able to manufacture some more kind of complex components. Like the gearbox was something we built first year that we've kind of held on to this throughout the last couple of years. And that was obviously a lot of kind of machine and something we don't want to be rebuilding every year if we can avoid it, because it is quite a lot of time to make something like that. So a lot of it, everything we can do is on campus. Everything we can make, we make. We try not to buy really anything, and then it's really awesome when we get our sponsors to help us out with something, whether that's helping to machine the mold. Komosin helped us with that. They're a local university here. And Rainhouse is a huge – they basically do a lot of the machining of really complex components with five-axis CNCs, which is just allows us to have really unique shaped parts.
That's great. I was going to ask you, how do you guys get your parts milled? Do you mill your own or do you – so you just answered all that.
So cool.
That's it. Now, what first got you interested in this, you guys? Each one of you, Mike and Jared, tell us how you guys got interested in this to begin with.
Yeah, for sure. For me, myself, it was just an interest like in the marine industry. So beyond just the Submarine Racing Club, I was also in the Sea Cadet program the Sea Cadet program here in Canada for like 7 years before. So it's always just been something I've really been interested in. My dad was also a member of the military for like 30 some odd years, and he's back in the Reg Force now. So I'm kind of like a parental almost, like father, like son, if you will.
Generational,
so, so after that, I joined the military myself. So I'm just a part-time member right now as I'm going through school.
Okay.
Kind of just an interest in the marine industry all my life. So it was kind of a natural progression, a thing that I thought I would enjoy. So
nice.
Interesting.
Nice.
Jared, how'd you get involved?
Yeah, so I originally saw it kind of as this crazy idea when the club first started out. It was just a Facebook post, just a comment, someone saying, hey, I'm starting this thing called a human-powered submarine racing club. And I had no idea what that meant, and I thought it was just crazy. I really like the idea of, you know, the creative design involved. And I have a background in kind of, you know, the marine industry and kind of aquatic sports as well. I used to play on Team BC water polo, and before that I was a competitive swimmer. And I've been diving for about a little over 10 years now. I started when I actually grew up. I spent, I think, 3.5 years on a sailboat. I was homeschooled for a little bit, and with my family,
nice.
We sailed from Canada over to, I think, Malaysia was the final last place that we left the boat. So a lot of interest in kind of the ocean, and UVic is a great spot to do that because we're right kind of on the island as well.
Right. Yeah, that's where you have Victoria. So I got to interrupt you real quick, fellas. You are tuned into KWMR. This is Off-Center Sports with Steve and Jaime. And today we're very pleased to have Jared Middleton and, God, I'm going to blow this, Mike Gonzalez. No, Mike, how do you say your last name, Mike?
Just Gingra.
Gingra. Okay, Mike Gingra. Thank you, Mike. And Jared is the ex-president and now pilot for the University of Victoria sub-team. And Mike is the current president. And, of course, they're coming from CFUV 101.9 FM in beautiful Victoria, British Columbia, where I've been. Hopefully, hopefully they've recovered since we've been there.
Because, yeah. You know, it seems that they have. Yeah. At least these guys have.
Yeah. I mean, I try not to break anything, but there's no promises, you know. But anyway, and so we have these guys on the show today. Now, how are you guys faring at this? Is there a dominant team? Who's the I don't know, the
powerhouse of the human submarine racing circuit?
Yeah.
Well, there's a few teams that have been around right since the kind of inception of submarine racing. Those are basically Omer is actually a Canadian team. They're from Quebec, and they definitely are one of the primary teams. I think they've won the last few years in a row. Just barely beating out the European team with a subname, WSUB from Delft University. Mm-hmm. And those two teams are kind of neck and neck, and they're kind of pushing the boundaries in a lot of ways. They've been around for about 30 years.
Wow.
And they have huge teams and a lot of resources allocated to developing it. So it's really incredible to see the direction you can kind of go. And so it's great with submarine racing because they really, it's not really... I guess, very, you know, confidential or private as far as the designs. Your design reports are public, so a lot of other teams are emulating what they do and are learning a lot from them. So those guys have kind of they're right now the leaders in the sport, but we're hoping to kind of come up on their tail a little more.
Now, I've noticed there's also a lot of European teams involved too.
Yep, for sure.
Yeah, quite a few. There is the two competitions. One of them in the States. At that competition, that was the one in Washington, D.C. that we just did this summer. Okay. At that competition, it's a lot more U.S. teams. Uh-huh. You know, there was even a few younger teams with some high school students that came out as well.
Yeah.
But primarily U.S. teams. And then in the European competition, obviously a lot more European teams because it is quite a bit of money to ship the submarines to these competitions and then obviously the whole team for them to fly down as well. So. Yeah. You see kind of different, different teams at both competitions. But, teams pretty much from everywhere. It's pretty cool, actually, to be able to meet so many people.
It's pretty incredible. Do you see it growing? Is it getting bigger, do you think?
I'd say so, yeah. There's more universities, I'd say, that have teams. Like, every year, I think there's new teams that are just kind of starting out, which is really cool to see. And I do believe they are growing. It's not an easy sport to do. So a lot of teams, you know, a lot of people hear about it and they think, well, that's pretty easy. It's just a bike and you put it all together. But you pretty much need to do all the design yourself.
Right.
And so I think there's a lot of teams that that want to start. A lot of universities start teams and they don't quite get to the functional stage. So I think it's definitely growing. And there's a few teams that try and take big steps forward and then they're out for a couple of years as they try and figure out some technical difficulties and then they're back in again.
And I noticed, too, it's pretty gender mixed, too, I noticed. It seems like
there's... Yeah, definitely. There's actually a separate, I believe at both competitions, there's kind of separate events. There's a men and women evaluated, records and stuff. So it really encourages teams to get some girls in the water and get them diving. We have a couple members that are certified as well who we're hoping to get in and it's great to have that. And it's quite cool as well because You know, it really encourages more diverse teams, which is awesome. And we have a couple girls on our team who are extremely helpful, some of our most valuable members, for sure.
Yeah.
Now, how does one train for this? Like, how do you guys, besides, you know, building a sub, I mean, what do you do as a person physically to get ready for competitions and so forth?
Yeah, so us currently, I don't know if we've mentioned it, but we're in our third year here with the competing. Mm-hmm. So for us, we're still in a stage where we're trying to make sure that we get our design and stuff fundamentally right.
Right.
And then maybe at that point, that's when we can make, like, start really worrying about training and getting to the peak performance kind of side of things.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I think the best form of training, at least for me, because I've been doing a little bit of it, is cycling.
Right.
So I like to do a lot of biking to school kind of every day, around 30 kilometers a day.
Nice.
Wow.
That's pretty helpful. And it also makes me feel a lot better once I actually get to school as well.
Yeah, well,
I can jump in here as well. Something for just there's some additional things, like for instance, your breathing is a massive part of racing the submarine. So because it is a free-filling submarine, there's water inside, and you're scuba diving inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of air in your lungs, just like when you're scuba diving, affects the buoyancy of the submarine. And so if you're really winded, you're taking these huge breaths, and you're breathing out really, really quickly,
right.
You're going to essentially change the buoyancy of your submarine. So working on your breathing is really important. And I used to be a free diver, and so that really helped me kind of focus in on that a little bit more and get a little more used to being kind of uncomfortable, not breathing.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really important, especially in our very first year when we were still working on our controls for managing the depth of the submarine. So I think just generally being comfortable in the water is a huge part, and then you've obviously got to have, you know, your diving skills, I think, is pretty crucial for being comfortable as well, and having that not be something you need to take your attention away from. And then the performance element is obviously important as well, and that's where the training comes in. But there's a lot of different elements as far as understanding how the sub works, being a confident diver, being relaxed in the water, and as well just basically more just cardio training and strength for your legs. It is a pretty short event. It's only about 3 or 4 minutes at most for the UK competition, and so it's really a sprint that you're doing, but it's a sprint where you want to almost keep your heart rate low and not be too exhausted coming out of the gate.
Mm-hmm. But it's an odd feeling being underwater, because if you've kind of ever kind of pushed yourself physically while you're underwater, scuba diving, you're never really able to catch your breath.
Nope.
So it's this weird feeling of always, like, being on that brink of, like, sucking in air and never really being able to kind of catch up.
Right.
So it's definitely, like, the cardio side of things as well as, like, being good in the water. And that's part of why this year I think we're pushing to get a new hull manufactured, using the same profile as before, but just a new hull, because then we're going to be able to work in that hull, and then we could use our old submarine, the one that we have currently, as, like, our testing platform for pilots and stuff like that to make sure that they can get used to, you know, the feeling of diving underwater and the feeling of having to breathe through the scuba tank as opposed to just normal air.
Ah, okay. Well, this goes to the racing part of it. Mr. Middleton, Jared had mentioned that you guys go down to a certain depth. How far down do you guys go?
So the submarine is pretty much good to whatever depth a recreational diver can go. We designed the submarine to be essentially so its depth doesn't vary. Its buoyancy, doesn't vary with depth. We don't have any kind of free air volumes in there. And it's really, the electronics are ideally built to be pretty robust. So we can take it as deep as a diver can go.
Right.
So right now at the competitions, the pools, I think they're about 20 to 35 feet deep.
Mm-hmm.
And so we generally have to go down. We have to calibrate the submarine on the bottom with the whole dive team there. So that's usually kind of the maximum depth that we're at, if we're sitting on that bottom, and that's where we get all set up. But when we train actually at the university, we can't get anywhere close to that depth. I think we have about 12 and a half feet here at our local pool.
Right.
We're working on getting authorized to go into a lake. I know some European teams actually practice in the ocean, which would be really
nice.
Awesome. But we obviously have a little bit of safety to work up to get to that point.
Right.
Because we are putting a person in this thing that we built, this contraption we built, and then putting them in a kind of large unknown body of water. So there's all kinds of concerns there, like, you know, some issue with the
tide, swell.
Equipment. You're in an enclosed space and you're moving pretty fast, and you don't really know what's around you. So a few hazards there.
There's also the currents and tides and yeah, all sorts absolutely. Of stuff. Yeah, this all correlates with surfing. I mean, being held down on big waves and not freaking out and holding your breath, you know?
Yeah.
As what is his name? Some pro surfer in Santa Cruz saying, yeah, I just went zen on that. I go, oh, that's a good way to look at it, you know? But, and free diving as well. This is fascinating.
Very fascinating.
I like this. Now you guys, it's all pedal power, obviously. Now, right. What kind of gear ratio? You guys didn't really tell us about that. Like, what kind of setup is that? And do you have gears? Do you go through, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So currently we're running kind of fixed gear, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
So
okay.
The set gear ratio of
hipsters.
For like input to your output.
Hipsters.
Yeah. No, go ahead. I'm sorry. We're just being smart asses over here.
Oh, yeah. No, so, yeah, it's like 5-to-1. But we do have, I guess we can kind of describe the way our kind of gear train, or not gear, well, yeah, like our power transfer kind of device is set up. So,
right.
And it's kind of set up exactly like a bike to start. So you have your big cog, your chain ring, if you will,
uh-huh.
That's connected to your kind of driven axle. So that's done like through a chain drive, just like as you would see on a bike. Yeah. And then that axle there rotates a bevel gear, and then there's two sets of bevel gears that are attached to that. So then it allows one shaft to rotate in one direction and the second shaft to rotate in the opposite direction. And then one of those shafts runs concentrically through the other one, and it allows us to get counter-rotation at the back of the submarine.
Mm-hmm.
And then that counter-rotation is ideal because it counters this kind of rolling moment that would happen
right.
If you were to just have a single set of propeller blades. But, yeah, so our gear ratio is like 5-to-1. We do have other size chain rings, though, so we can kind of swap that out as we mm-hmm. see fit. The problem with having, like, shifting, like being able to shift gears underwater kind of thing would just be that, well, there is water, so you need to make sure that you would tension your chain correctly and all that good stuff,
sure.
But it doesn't come off underwater.
Right, which can happen with yes. You got the water around it.
Well, yeah. that brings me to a question. Mm-hmm. So what do you use for lubrication for the chain since you're underwater?
We, right now in the gearbox, we actually just have Vaseline. It's because our competitions are in, they're primarily in Navy bases. Well, they're exclusively in Navy bases, and they're very expensive facilities. Where there's a massive amount of water, and for them, draining and cleaning up those pools is a huge ordeal. So it's absolutely crucial that we not have anything that slicks, and that creates a lot of challenges for the teams. And
right.
It's primarily because of sealing electronics and things, because you typically are going to use like an O-ring grease or something there. Mm-hmm. But we don't actually use any lubrication in our gearbox aside from just Vaseline, which isn't a tremendous amount of effect. You know, the main thing to look at is the amount of power that we're putting in.
Right.
You know, it's you know, we wish we were like a boat engine, but we're not quite there yet. And so it's not a tremendous amount of wear on the gears. But really, a huge part of this sport is figuring out a way. I mean, there's obviously the engineering portion, and its primary goal is to get as much power from the pilot into the water as possible. And so we want to have as much efficiency as possible. And so we design everything with bearings. And all of our gears, we're pretty careful about doing the correct procedure for spacing those to essentially minimize any kind of friction, any kind of wear that would result in a loss of energy for us. So definitely something we think about a lot. But yet, like the chain system, you know, obviously that chain is moving through the water as
right,
we're pedaling.
Yes.
And so that's something we think about as far as losses. And, you know, we've looked at other systems involved using like a sun gear system, or using a direct drive system where the shaft goes directly into a little gearbox between the cranks.
Mm.
And some teams use variable pitch propellers, so they can actually change the pitch of their propellers
uh-huh.
rather than changing the gear ratio. And obviously what that does is kind of gives you, you know, like your car transmission, it gives you kind of a range of speeds that you can output for a given power.
Yeah. What about the size of the pilots? Does that make any difference? And if so, what's optimum to use?
So that's actually a huge topic of conversation for the team.
Okay.
It's pretty unclear right now what the optimal pilot size is. So do you want a smaller pilot where you can have a smaller submarine with less drag, potentially more maneuverable, who maybe puts out less power? Or do you want a larger pilot who is going to be in a larger submarine putting out more power? Right now, I think we're primarily at the point where we're focusing on designing a really reliable and quick submarine, and we're worrying less about the pilot and focusing more on building a larger submarine that can accommodate more pilot sizes, mm-hmm. so that it's more about finding the right person to put in there. then we build the entire submarine around a specific individual, especially if something happened to that person. You know, they couldn't make it to the competition, or they had some kind of an injury. That'd be a big problem if we had designed the whole submarine for them and they were the only person of that size that could fit into it. So definitely something we have to kind of think about and analyze, but we're working on putting in more adjustability, especially since we want to have more pilots coming in and training. We're really hoping that some of our female members will be, more of them will be getting certified, and they'll be given a shot in the submarine too. So we want to have that range of adjustability inside.
That makes total sense.
Yeah.
And I got to cut in right now, kids. All of us here. I say gang, kids. You can't say gang because people get upset, you know.
But anyway. What kind of show is this?
Yeah, but you're tuned into KWMR. This is Off Center Sports with Stephen Hyman. Today we're very pleased to have Jared Middleton and Mike Jingra. I'll get it,
we'll
man.
We'll get it.
Jingra. Wow, look out. Or as we're calling him, Mike Gonzalez.
Yeah.
And Jared is the ex-president and now pilot for the University of Victoria sub-team. And, of course, Mike is the current president. And they are talking to us from beautiful CFUV 101.9 FM in Victoria, British Columbia.
Columbia,
my friend.
They're the northern people.
That's right. They're the other border people,
yes.
Like my family likes to say. But yeah. Anyway.
So getting back to this now, is there any weight that the submarine has to be?
Well, it has to be the submarine has to displace its volume in water is one way to think about it. It has to be neutrally buoyant. That's the key thing. We could have a submarine that was a little bit too heavy or a little bit too buoyant. But then the problem is we'd need to be using thrust from the pilot in order to keep the submarine down. This is what you might see for like a, you know, what most people think of as a submarine is like a big military submarine. And they have ballast tanks so they can change their buoyancy. We don't really do that. Our equivalent of a ballast tank is the pilot's lungs. And they have, you know, I guess a lot more power so they can kind of power up or power down. We try to calibrate it as best we can to be neutrally buoyant, so to weigh exactly what the water would weigh, essentially. So it's a whole procedure when we get in the pool. We have our whole dive team come down. It takes at least three divers and then the pilot inside. And basically the pilots are lifting up the submarine, seeing how it performs, and then communicating to the pilot and handing lead in or foam in or taking that out as well and shifting it around inside the submarine to try and get it so essentially it weighs the same amount as the water. But there's no dry weight kind of restrictions on the submarine. You could have a tremendous amount of lead and foam in there. And, you know, theoretically, I guess you could just build a submarine that was extremely heavy, but you wouldn't get it off the bottom.
Right. And moving it forward might be a bit difficult, I would think, as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You can't build a tractor. Actually, that's one of the competition-specific things they say is you can't build something with wheels that just drives along.
And if you surface, then you're a boat, so you're no longer submarine racing either.
Right.
Yeah,
that's true. Now you're surface racing. Yeah.
Cheaters.
Which brings up the question now. When you guys, it sounds like there's a lot of prep. Once you get the sub, say, down to the floor. You get, say, three divers down. You're prepping it all. When does the actual race start? How do you guys go about that? Is there a light system like a Christmas tree? Or is there, you know, kind of indicator?
Last competition, it's got a little bit different at both. So in the UK competition, actually at both competitions, they have a hydrophone underwater. What is it called when it's able to? They have race captain or the race coordinator who is basically calling different teams in. And they're telling them to, at the U.S. competition, they'd say, Chinook, 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 which is the name of our submarine, lock and load. And what that means is put your pilot in the submarine. And so at that point, you basically have your pilot with a diver ready on the surface. The pilot has a backup small air supply with them. And they usually go down on the diver's backup air supply. They go down into the, quite a dark pool, especially in the U.S. competition. You go down. Mm-hmm. And basically, the other divers are down there holding onto the sub, ready to help you get loaded into it. So you got to get in, you got to clip your shoes into the pedals in the submarine, which can be kind of challenging in the dark.
Yeah.
While you're trying to squeeze into that space, and then they've got to put the hatch on top of you. You got to make sure that essentially your regulators aren't tangled or anything like that, and that you know you're not going to basically that all you do a final systems check to make sure that. As soon as you start, you're not going to go right into the ground or your hatch isn't going to come right off or something like that.
Right.
And then basically you're then moved up to the race line and then the person who's coordinating the race basically gives you the good to go. And they have to ensure that there's a basically safety set up for you as well. There's at both competitions, there's a dive team in a Zodiac that's on the surface. And so essentially they can see you in the U.S. competition because it's a little darker. You have a strobe light that that dive team is following. So basically when they say go, all the pieces are in place. The pilot's in there, they're locked and loaded. The dive team is holding the sub, ready to get out of the way of the propellers. Mm-hmm. And the rescue team is on the surface, and they can see you.
Okay.
Now, for our listeners, I mean, I've seen it in videos, but you don't get into the sub and actually, like, sit like you would on a bicycle. You guys are in the prone position laying down?
Yeah, so you're basically kind of laying on your front. I mean, you could do any kind of position you want in the submarine. It's not a rule that you have to be kind of laying down in the prone position on your front with your legs behind you pedaling. You could do it all kinds of different ways. You're actually allowed a two-person sub. So University of Texas actually has a two-person sub, and they had a pilot who was facing backwards, kind of with their back into a little backrest. They're pedaling. Those setups, and they're side-by-side, actually, the two pilots in that configuration. But typically, just because of kind of you want to have as hydrodynamic, as you know, low drag as possible, you try and put the sub in, or the pilot inside of a submarine that looks like a teardrop. And the other one rule that we really have to think about a lot is the dive team has to be able to see the pilot's face in some way directly. So there has to be like a little hatch or a window. Uh-huh. And so you'd be tempted to just build like a shell with a little camera or something like that. But the dive team needs to be able to see if the pilot's in distress as well.
Okay, now you had mentioned in the two-man sub that the guy lays down, so it'd be sort of like a recumbent bicycle position.
Exactly.
Now I'm trying to picture what it's like when you're laying down on the ground, basically with your chest. How hard is it to pedal?
I guess I can go into that a bit because I'm actually like 6'4", so I'm a bit taller.
Yeah.
It's definitely, especially with like our current submarine setup that we have right now. It's not an easy endeavor, and we actually kind of moved to clip-in pedals as well for our, before we just had, like, toe clips, so, like, you just slide your foot into it. But this last year we had actual shoes that would clip into, the pedals. Uh-huh. So just attaching those is a difficulty in and of itself because, as you get closer to the front, the hull kind of narrows. So you're the pilot, you're kind of in a little narrow enclosure with your head, and you're trying to like look back, and it's like, where are those pedals? And not really any light in the submarine either. So you're just trying to find where the pedals are and clipping in. And then beyond that, when you're actually starting to kind of put in power and stuff like that, then at least for me and my height, like I start to hit my knees a little bit on the hull as well.
Right.
Or
I can imagine.
Hitting like your foot on the back of the hull as well as you're going on the upstroke. So it's not and this kind of comes into like how you choose to design your submarine. Like if you want to design it for a bigger person, so you have to displace more water so they can put in more power, or if you want to design it for a smaller person, so you displace less water, but then they maybe can't put in as much power, right? So
right.
Now, I want to go back to – I just wanted to add a question before we went off into this. Was once you're at the bottom and you're getting ready to compete, and you said the three divers that you're locked and loaded have to get out of the way. Do you guys get like a push? Can you get a push, or do you have to literally go from a standstill on your own power?
You pretty much have to go directly from a standstill. So,
gotcha.
Basically, okay. As soon as that pilot starts going, because we have no kind of variable gear system, the stuff is a little bit slow to get started, and so – it is about 760 kilograms when you factor in the water as well, so like you know, like 1,500 pounds or so, and it takes a little while to accelerate. Like you know, you think about what a modern bike weighs.
Uh-huh.
Your acceleration is primarily based on the force you can apply and the mass. And so for us, it's a lot slower to get started. So that's why it's really important for the sub to be calibrated well. So the sub will essentially float there for a second as it slowly kind of gets up to speed as those blades start to go. And we also design it so that the blades are, it's really hard to start out. We pretty much have the gear ratio, almost like you're really pushing in the beginning, I guess, just like if you were starting out with a bike in kind of a high gear. So basically the blades are slowly beginning to spin, and as you get closer to your top speed, it gets a little bit easier. But obviously there's a few kind of differences there where, you're pedaling through water, so there's a little more resistance, so we want to kind of keep that cadence as low as possible, so we're kind of losing as little energy as possible when we're pedaling. And, it's a little interesting.
Yeah, Jared's been to both of these competitions, so he's able to speak a bit more to it than I am. With the U.S. competition, actually, there's a bit of a run-up, I believe, before you actually kind of pass the start line. So even though you start from a standstill, you actually get some time to come up to your top speed. And that's why, like, maybe for the U.S. competition, gearing ratios isn't something that we're super interested in looking into, because we know that once we pass that line, we're already going to be going at our top speed, and then just maintaining that speed for the length of the course. So,
okay. And what is the top speed that you guys can get the sub to?
At our very first competition, our top speed was, I think, 5.4 knots. 5.4 knots. Quite quick, which is, you know, like if you're swimming, to give you some perspective, you know, I think a normal person would probably comfortably swim around one knot. So it's really fast. You know, I'm not sure. I'm not sure if anyone knows exactly what Michael Phelps swims, but I think it's in the neighborhood of about 3 knots. It's definitely faster than anyone could swim.
Right.
It's quite quick.
Unless you're being chased by a shark, but then again, that hasn't been reported yet.
Maybe you swim faster.
And then, I mean, this may be a dumb question. How do you stop? You don't have brakes, do you?
That's also a really important question. So, at this last most recent competition, we had a few times we really had to stop quickly. That's because we did some modifications to the hydrodynamics of our sub, and we discovered that it becomes unstable at high speed. There's a few times when we're going along at our top speed, and we lost control of the submarine. And because this course is like a drag race style course, it's in a very small pool, but not very wide, and so you don't have a lot of margin of error if you to kind of turn a little bit. And so it's a lot of momentum you have in the submarine as well. And we have no brake system currently. If you try and say pedal backwards, the chain will just skip over the sprocket, really no good there to stop. So what we do is we're able to open the hatch. So the hatch on the front of the submarine is kind of the front top quadrant of the submarine, if you can picture that. It pops right off, and then that acts like a big parachute. Basically that allows you to slow down a little bit faster. But sometimes we don't stop, and we just hit things.
So it was a bit unfortunate. Yeah, one of our ways that we stopped at this last competition was literally by running into a wall because of that. But at the end of the day, it's a good learning opportunity. We get to kind of find out, you know, why that happened, and revisit the drawing board and change our design from that.
It
also kind of ties into the whole testing thing, because if we were able to kind of test a bit more beforehand, you know, albeit in a pool or a lake or something like that, then maybe we would have found that this happens, that we kind of lose control and, you know, we need to change that. So that's something that we're really pushing for kind of this year.
And it's a little different in testing as well, because we have a bunch of our kind of support team in the water as well, so people who aren't diving but who are helping out in the pool.
Right.
And so in order to kind of see how the submarine will turn, it's kind of an interesting exercise in a little 25-meter pool, kind of L-shaped actually. So basically go as fast as we can and try and see basically what kind of turning we're able to achieve with the hull. And then we don't want to have a lot of distance to slow down, so we typically have, call them human bumpers in the water, who are basically catching the submarine.
Human bumpers, I love it.
They're trying to stop the submarine as kind of late as possible and slow it down as quickly as possible. And so it sometimes requires a little bit of like really, really quick swimming to get to the right spot, because we aren't always exactly sure how the turning is going to go.
Right.
Or the buoyancy or whatever. So there's been a few incredible saves by our dive team that prevent the submarine from bumping into the wall. But one thing about the sub is, you know, because it's not, it's refilling, it's not pressurized, hitting something isn't quite as catastrophic as it would be with, like, you know, a conventional submarine. You don't blow up.
That's a good thing.
Nuclear fission in there, yeah. But it does sound like you guys are kind of like an out of control watermelon truck, just kind of going downhill. You know,
sometimes that's what it comes down to.
Now, okay, we got this one question we ask each and every single guest that we have, and I always saddle poor Steve with it because Steve, you do it so well.
Yeah,
but we'll just let you go ahead.
The question is, and I don't know if it's even possible with this, but cheating. Has there ever been a controversy about somebody possibly cheating, doing something that's illegal, either with a sub, a prop, a gear ratio, anything like that in the sport?
I mean, juicing.
Yeah, I mean, do people juice?
Let's see. I think one of the big things about submarine racing that's awesome is that It's mostly people trying to kind of learn about their careers and make connections and all that, as opposed to winning specifically in the event.
Gotcha.
And so I think that really inspires an honest crowd where the stakes are
makes
pretty
sense.
High for getting, you know, for cheating in an engineering competition.
Yeah.
You know, for winning, it's bragging rights, but ultimately the real value in the sport is what you kind of learn from doing it. And, you know, I think initially before we had gone into the rules a lot, we got really creative with a lot of ideas, which I guess would be cheating if you were to actually do them. We haven't obviously done any of them, but there's all kinds of ideas we had, such as, you know, changing out the pilot's air with pure oxygen.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
A little bit of a boost.
Yeah.
So you could have that tank filled a little bit differently.
Yeah.
They have specific bans on basically using air as any kind of thrust or using any kind of electric assist on anything.
No storing any power either. If you were to spin the pedals beforehand, store power, and then use that, that's not allowed either. It has to be all powered by you kind of directly.
Interesting, though.
Good point, yeah, because some teams, you know, it might be advantageous to build very heavy components in your propulsion system. You're not technically allowed a flywheel, but they're not going to. You know, when does something become a flywheel, and when is it just a really heavy component? And really, you know, with submarine racing, it's different from, like, say, you know, race cars or, you know, Formula or something like that, because we can make the sub as heavy as we want it, and then we can add foam to counter that weight. So, I think for some teams, their design considerations come down to, in some ways, storing energy kind of discreetly. Maybe that's probably the closest thing to cheating, I'd say.
Okay. So there's no, like, blood transfusions or anything like that?
No.
Just so, you know, you get your blood the night before and you've got extra oxygen in your blood so you can go faster. And
right,
you know.
The blood doping, yeah. Or there's no torpedoes from other guys that, you know, launch them off of the deck.
We're working on our torpedo launcher, though. So.
Yeah, I guess the only depth charges are at the bar later, right?
You
know?
Yeah, you got it.
That would be kind of cool, though, to see these guys try to shoot.
Oxygen training system and all that kind of stuff. But at this point, none of it matters unless we have a really good submarine. So that's where we put most of our focus, is on making the sub better. We know how to do that, and I think that you might, you know, way down the road, that might become more of an issue as everyone's kind of at an equal playing field, and it's more about the pilot performance and tiny little advantage. But, you know, having a really well-planned-out design that's quite reliable makes all the difference, and there isn't really the need, you know, to do that as well.
And it makes sense.
As well about the, sorry if I'm...
No, go ahead.
Go ahead.
But what is nice about the sport is that they don't kind of stifle creativity in design either.
Oh, good.
As we mentioned, with there being kind of different categories for men and women, obviously, to compete in, there's also different propulsion categories. So you can have your kind of regular kind of, what's the word here? Propulsion, like with the propeller rotating at the back kind of drive system.
Uh-huh.
You can have... You can go completely off the wall, basically, with how you choose to propel your submarine forward, and you'll be non-prop systems, and you'll be marked in a completely different category. So, I don't really ever foresee it getting to that kind of point of optimization, just because, you know, if you're at the pinnacle of you know, what you're able to do in terms of design for a prop system, then the natural progression will be to say, okay, well, what can I do with this now?
Right.
So,
yeah.
You know, and being engineering teams, we are kind of interested in seeing, you know, what can we push, how can we improve it. So if we're starting to run out of ways to improve one propulsion system, we might just move to another one or something like that. So
yeah, and that makes sense. I mean, and like you said, competition is second behind just the engineering, and basically it's the bottom line, it's physics, you know, and we're all learning about physics right here, right now, and how you can apply it. So
yeah, I mean, this is just totally incredibly cool stuff.
Yeah, I like it. I you know, I'd go back to college.
I was just going to say, how come this wasn't around when I was going to college?
What are these two old guys doing in
here?
You know? No, I got peers right now that are getting masters in cartooning, so there you go. You know,
they're missing it, man. They should be doing this.
I agree. Gentlemen, do you have any – we've got to get pretty close to wrapping it up, but do you have any final thoughts here on the future of human submarine racing and so forth and so on?
Well, the future is, I think hopefully bright for submarine racing. We're hoping the club will just continue on and we'll be able to continuously develop our sub and share it with you guys. We hope to kind of keep you guys updated with the website that we mentioned at the beginning, the UVIC submarine.com. At our next competition, we hope to have a bunch more photos. So if you guys are interested in kind of following along with what we're doing here,
most definitely,
our builds and the competition we go to, stay tuned.
We upload a lot of photos there, actually, And I think I remember looking back through them a little while ago, and I remember seeing one of those photos where one of our kind of divers was acting as that human fender. So I kind of see if you can find that. That can be your Easter egg for your viewers.
Ah, there you go.
And that like, to most people, it's just like, oh, cool, they're doing some sort of diving operation. But we were looking through the album afterwards, like, oh no, that was
That was a safety issue right there. Could you give the website again one more time for our listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. It's UVIC, so UVIC, and submarine, all one word, .com.
There you go,
excellent.
Peeps. Yeah.
And please do forward the information to us. We'll tell the listeners about it, definitely.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to be following it. So
yeah, this is cool stuff.
This is
really cool.
Well, gentlemen, we'd like to thank you guys very much for taking your time out today, and we actually got a hold of you, too. That was great.
Yeah, got it figured out at the end.
Yeah,
absolutely. Well, thank you so much, guys, for taking your time and you know, educating us more on human submarine racing.
And good luck.
Yeah, it's our pleasure. We'll be sure to talk to you again sometime soon about, you know, maybe once we go to the competition this summer.
We'd love it.
I can see where we're at.
Please do.
Yeah, we would do it.
We will pass it on. Believe us. This is great stuff.
Absolutely.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right, cool. Thanks.
Okay.